Hello and welcome to the Modern Maker Podcast for Thursday, October 31st, 2019.
Otherwise, happy Halloween, everybody!
Man. That's good because I actually forgot to look up what weird holiday it is. So, why don't you go ahead and tell us about the history of Halloween, Mike?
All right. Well, it all happened in the year 300, and people started wearing pumpkins on their heads and thought it was a good idea.
Jesus came back for a second and time then... with a bunch of candy.
All right. Let's hear best costumes ever in your guys' history. I already know what Mike's is.
Yeah, I showed Mike's you mine, is. Ben.
What was it? How old were you and what was it?
I was 21, maybe, somewhere in that range. I might have been 20, but I was Nacho Libre.
Oh, nice.
And I went all out. And by I went all out, I mean my mom made me a really cool costume.
Yeah, by this all, video, my mom thought I was Jack Black.
This video he has of this costume is straight fire.
Yeah, I'll post it on my Instagram on Halloween day.
So now, okay, if you were 21, would that have been like well after Nacho Libre was out? Like Nacho Libre was
Nacho
several
Libre
years old,
is
right?
Never out. It's Nacho Libre came out whenever I was like 12. Okay, that's why good, it had such an impact on me. But I don't think Nacho Libre ever goes out.
Like, still,
it's always
still relevant.
Here. Yeah, it's the best film Nickelodeon has ever produced.
There's so many great ones.
Chris, ben, your best costume?
You mine, I'm going to have to go with in kindergarten, so I would have been 5. I was a shark. This was back when, like, my mom made all of my costumes still.
Nice.
None of the store-bought stuff. And I've actually since seen, like, a store-bought version of this, but granted, when I was 5, there was no internet to speak of, and I wasn't really, like, keeping my finger on the pulse of Halloween costume history. But so to me, it was groundbreaking at the time, but it was basically, like, a shark. Where, you know, your head is popping out of the mouth.
Oh, that's pretty good. Like, it's eating you, or like you're coming out of his mouth. Not like coming he out, swallowed yeah, like you, but you're out.
Yeah, you just can see my head inside of his mouth.
That's pretty cool.
And it's one of those things where, like, that we would always, like, I would wear something, and then, like, my mom's best friend had, like, a kid 1 year older than me and 1 year younger than me. And so my brother's 2 years older than me, so we could, like, bounce costumes back and forth. I think that one made its way around to a couple. That was probably worn, like, 5 times.
Wow.
A lot of candy was collected in that shark costume.
Well, that's the thing. If you're going to make your own costume, at least give it some mileage.
Yeah, you got to get your use out of it.
What
about you, Ben?
My best costume ever was an Elvis costume that I wore pretty much like 5 or 6 years in a row from my college till right after college. It was like the full red and gold jumpsuit.
So like the old Las Vegas Elvis.
Yeah, I bought it. It was the first thing I ever bought on eBay.
Nice.
Nice.
It was like, one, it's like a pretty fantastic red jumpsuit with like this, you know, it's just bell bottoms, bell sleeves, if that's a thing. Just red and gold. Just like, it almost looks more James Brown because it was a cheap costume. So the material was like really like skin tight, but slinky. So... you know, those are in my lots of lifting days thing. So it was a certain celebration to my masculine vanity as well as being completely ridiculous. And I crushed it in that costume. I think like one of the best Halloweens I ever had is I was living at the vegan co-op at the time, which was just like a soulless place to live, full of bickering about petty things like whether or not honey was vegan or not.
Was it?
But
no.
It was split down the middle. But I didn't really hang out with the people that lived there that much. But on Halloween, I was going to go to this party, you know, that some of the architecture students were hosting. So I got on my Elvis costume, looking pretty fly, ready to rock and roll. It was freezing outside. And just as I go downstairs, one of my housemates, one of the redeemable vegans at the house, is like, hey, you want to do acid? And I was like, all right. So
is it vegan? And then you try it.
Well, it's chemical, so no animals were harmed.
Yeah, acid
maybe
is
only
vegan.
The one taking it. Water drip break.
Yeah, so took acid and then like went to this party, started tripping a little bit hard, and then I found like a 5-gallon water jug, like an empty one, and I started just like banging it because it makes, you know, like kind of bong sounds. Yeah. I was pretty amused
really reverberates.
By that, but. It was a pretty epic night. I like went all over the campus, met up with a bunch of my buddies, and yeah, sometimes I would tell people, you know, hey, if my behavior's a little bit odd, here's why. like, but for the next, I just let them figure it out for themselves.
for the next 3 years on campus, I was known as Acid Trip Elvis.
Yeah.
Well, it was weird. It was like, I mean, my friends were kind of doing similar stuff too. So it was all good in the hood.
Right. And you weren't the only one. Oh,
the best part though. Okay. So the jumpsuit was primarily red and then it had gold accents and the bell bottoms, like the pleat to the bell bottoms, like the way they sewed it was like a gold pleat in this like shiny red fabric. And I was like, you know, traipsing around the campus and I would see these like flashes of red and gold around my feet. And I kept thinking that like my feet are on fire. So I'd be like walking. I wish one of my, like this was before like, you know, cell phones, video cameras and stuff. So I wish somebody had like recorded me just sort of like walking and then like occasionally like getting a hitch in my step, kind of jumping and kicking up my heels a little bit.
Nice. Hey, Chris, I just hit that group text with Oh, you did see it?
I just saw. So was that like a video you edited together when you were 21? Was that was pre-YouTube, yeah. Right?
Wait, no, I had to have been doing like 20, YouTube.
How old are you? 23?
I'm 24.
Okay.
You know, I might have been closer to 18 or 19. I was giving myself closer to 21 just because I remember that I ruined that outfit
due to legal consumption of alcohol at the age of 21.
Yeah, but now that I think about it, there's no way that it's that old. Here, play it into the microphone for the viewers. Right, I'm going to try and get a nice Instagram bump off of this clip teaser.
Podcasts are always great when you show a video, so here we go.
Yeah, so just imagine young Michael in his husky days.
All right, here we go.
In a Supreme Nacho Libre outfit. What is this, Batman?
Yeah, well,
so there we go.
Throw it up on Instagram.
I'm throwing it up on Instagram.
On Thursday,
go check it
out
at Modern Builds. That's an OG young Michael clip right there. Hope you enjoy it.
Nice. All right. Enough Halloween talk. Why don't we get into whatever we've been working on? What have you guys been working on? Actually, why don't you go last, Mike? Well, let's let Ben go
first.
Cool, dude. Because I feel yours is going to jump into a different topic.
Well, first of all, sorry for missing a show last week, but we've done a lot of these things.
You guys
been
are busy
pretty
in
consistent.
New York.
And yeah, so let me recap our New York adventure. And there was a lot happening. So we were out there working on Andrew Schulte's new podcast studio kind of production facility in Brooklyn. Had a blast, spent about 10 days there. A bunch of things went great. A bunch of things went disastrously wrong. Mm. We adapted. We dealt with it. And we might. Would fair to say we crushed it?
As always.
So Andrew's awesome. I get there a little bit before Mike, take some meetings, do stuff, check out the space. Mike comes, we get material runs. And the whole kind of timing around this thing was based on these acoustical panels arriving that are going to soundproof the studio. Mm. And there was delays in production. So that really that's the disastrous part. What wasn't anything, you know, on our part. It was just, we were waiting this whole time for these panels. So we had to kind of move ahead and do a bunch of the other stuff.
Right.
Mike totally killed it by making really good production desks because they're doing a really cool setup. And I think one of the takeaways for the trip for me was we can up our sort of podcast production game with new tech in some really interesting ways. So they're using these beamform mics, so you never have to wire anything up. It just it's this big panel that hangs from the ceiling, and then you have an operator sort of control it. So he's targeting different people with a whole bunch of tiny mics that make up this panel. It's kind of like the way a big LED light panel is a whole bunch of tiny lights making up one big right. lighting component. So imagine the same thing with microphone, where you can control each one of those little mics individually to sort of really pick up the right amount of sound from each individual talking without wiring them up. So really cool stuff. I built out a stage and a photo wall because you know how for Joe Rogan, you know when someone's going on Rogan because they're standing in front of that brick wall. So mm-hmm. I made that equivalent of that wall in a totally different style for Andrew in the main part of their sort of green room or kind of waiting area. Mike nailed those two desks. And then collectively, we worked on some sort of detail and trim and some of the sort of aesthetic backgrounds for the Flagrant 2 podcast, which is one of Schulte's podcasts. But really fun. And we had two really big nights, I would say. So the first night was raining. Mike had come in on a red eye, was kind of tired, but we're like, well, you know what? Let's still make the most out of it. The stuff hadn't arrived yet, so we kind of had a free night. So we went to the new museum, We went to a couple like fashion boutiques that our boy White Mike, you know, getting into that. What was it? What was the company, Mike?
Oh, Aimé Leon Dor.
Mm, sounds classy.
No, it's just one of the brands that they stock at 1032 Space, and they opened like their first location in Brooklyn. So right. I wanted to check it out. It was cool.
It was New York.
That's some cool little. Yeah, exactly. You did it.
Yeah.
You fix it for me.
So
actually, no, that's not how I would explain it at all. You said it's like Manhattan.
It was in Manhattan.
In Manhattan.
No, it was down the street from
Aimé Leon Dor. No.
Yo, that was all right, keep going. I'm pulling up maps.
Yeah.
Fact check me, bro.
So we go to the museum. We go check out the spot Mike wanted to do. Went to Muji to get more sketchbooks. Then we meet up with one of my business partners that's partnering with me for affordable housing. We're slinging drinks at this cool place. Then Andrew hits us up and be like, hey, you guys want to go to Madison Square Garden and see a Knicks game?
Wow.
Pop over, see a Knicks game.
Was that still preseason?
Yeah.
Okay.
Saw
was
Vince
it the
Carter.
Pelicans?
It was Hawks and Knicks.
Okay.
Saw 42-year-old Vince Carter just holding it down.
Getting some nice assists.
Yeah.
Nice.
Not really Dimes. Dunking, but so it's just one of those like nights where you're like, oh, we're just going to take it low key. But because of the density of the city, things just keep escalating. We're slinging drinks. We're having a blast, right? So that was a good night. And then the other big night was we were building late. I had to leave a little bit early because I had to go to this tech thing where I got 3D scanned, up with Farm Shelf, one of the companies I'm sort of starting to collaborate with that's creating some really cool technology around growing plants indoors.
Yeah, I stayed back to edit while you went to that.
Right.
And if I was aware that I would have gotten a breakdancing 3D model of myself in exchange for attending this event, I 100% would have been there.
Dude,
I had no idea.
It was an amazing facility, too. It was kind of like, it was similar to the Autodesk build space, but with more office space mixed in with the fabrication. So you kind of have your own station and storage space to work. It was pretty cool. It's in the Navy shipyards in Brooklyn. So it's called New Labs. Be sure to check it out. And it's like Cloud Lens or 3D Lens Cloud was the company that scanned me. And I'm now trying to get a copy of that model so I can 3D print myself, you know, for hood ornaments, you know, whatever your sort of half Asian maker kind of figurine needs are. So
there are a lot.
So I'm at this event. I'm there from 7 till 9, checking out stuff, having a few drinks. Mike then meets up with us. We go to another bar, have a few drinks. Schultz hits us up and be like, hey, want
to
come to the
to
comedy cellar?
Game?
Yeah. So we go and see at the, you know, he gets us into the kind of the area where the comedians hang out in the comedy cellar because, you know, sold out. Really amazing night. Stand-up comedy in person with people that are good it's pretty, what would you say, Mike? It's very entertaining. It's excellent.
Yeah, I would have described it as funny.
Yeah.
but no, it was really good. I was
comical?
Surprised that, yeah, I was surprised at the consistency of the lineup. It was one of those things where, like, a lot of times you go to, like, music shows or you go to any kind of performance, you're sort of there for the headliner, but the openers kind of are just, like,
whatever.
They're just there to fill time. But I was surprised at the consistency of the lineup. Everybody was firing off. It was very funny.
It was really fun. So, Schultz closes, you know, he's done at, like, 1:30. Then we go to this, like, back room, more drinks. Our boy
I blacked out there.
Yeah. Our boy White Mike is starting to get loose. He's having a lot of old fashions, right? He goes, people go, hey, what do you want to drink? He'll be like, I'll have an old fashioned. And they're like, all right. So Mike's slinging old fashions. We're hanging out with a bunch of comedians and Schultz's whole crew. Then we go to like some club that takes us to like 3 o'clock in the morning. Then we're like at some Chinese food place.
I came back there. I remember that.
Yeah.
I don't remember the club at all.
Mike was in and out of consciousness at this point. Because he's like,
but enjoying myself.
He's
I
like
was having a great
nine
time.
Nine old fashions deep.
I don't know. If I remembered how many I had, I probably wouldn't have gotten myself into this predicament.
Me, veteran of the game, pacing myself. And yeah, so then we have Chinese food. Amazing. We kind of wrap up there around 4:30, say our goodbyes, lots of bro hugs. Me and Mike Uber back to Brooklyn because we're staying kind of right near where the build site is. And the night ended with Mike doing a forced hurling into the dumpster at the side of the hotel, but
like,
did it like
a
pro.
To build tomorrow.
Didn't get in on himself, and we woke up early the next morning and got right back to building.
Yeah, didn't miss a beat, man.
Very nice. So I hope there's a lot of good liver doctors in New York.
Well, it just keeps you strong, man. It keeps your liver resilient if you test it occasionally.
Yeah. And we were there for like
cardio for the liver.
We were there for 10 days and there was like two nights where we were drinking. That was like pretty much it. And then I was like, go, building.
Nice. Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, it was one of those travel projects that I think lends itself well to what me and Mike are good at, which is, you know, working with a limited tool palette and kind of just figuring stuff out in the fly and making it just good enough.
Very nice.
So the photo wall, we did it all out of molding from Home Depot to give it this kind of cool texture.
Yeah.
And then Mike crushed those desks. We experimented with some soundproofing stuff from Home Depot to make the deck. This is going to sort of be like a stage. And yeah, the acoustic panels, some of them arrived. There's a few sort of problems with some of the ones that did arrive, but now we're sort of working that through. So we'll have to go back at some point, but still successful trip from our standpoint.
Sounds like you accomplished the bulk of what you went there to accomplish in the time you had.
Yeah, everything that we were there to do independently, we pretty much got done. Everything else that was depending on other factors sort of fell short, but
TBD.
As long as we're the reliable ones, then I'm happy with the situation, you know?
Yep.
Nothing more valuable you can be than reliable.
Yeah.
That's right. That's what I always say.
But now that we're back in Joshua Tree, we were just talking about how nice it is back to be in a schedule, in a routine, you know, in the having the home field advantage again is you just don't appreciate it when you don't have a break from it. But when you get out of that sort of zone and it's like, oh man, I can do this, but it's rough. It just makes you really happy when you get back.
Big time. What about you, Chris? What's new in the world? We missed a week.
Oof, we did. I put out that video that I've been talking about forever with the splintered epoxy legs.
Might be, I think from my standpoint, speaking for myself, I think that's my favorite project you've ever done.
Thank you.
Certified banger for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely put it up near the top. I don't know if it's my favorite, but yeah,
top
it's definitely
four?
A good
Mount Rushmore of Four Eyes.
Sure. We'll put it on the mount. Chisel four pieces of furniture into the side of a mountain that I've made. No, it was a good one. I think it was a good video too. And I'm happy that I've been getting like some comments from people noticing that like my past few edits have been a little bit better. And I think that they have. Like, I think there's been sort of a return to what I was doing early. Like when I first started posting videos, it was like once every 6 weeks I would put up a video. So I would just spend like however much time it took to do it. And then once I got like, you know, just flashback to a year ago when I was just like burning the candle at both ends and just super swamped. I was still putting a lot into the edits, but like I was like definitely like I have to have this thing done by like this Thursday or, you know, whatever date. And so I was having to like cut a few corners here and there. Now with Sean on the channel, like, you know, I for the most part, it's been a positive reception. I've had a few like negative comments where people are like, I came here to see you and like basically kind of bad mouthing Sean, which I always feel bad about.
Big time.
And like I always tell him, like, you're not going to get less of me. And in fact, you're going to get a better version of me because this is going to free me up to like spend more time on every project. And so I've been able to do that. Like my last few projects, I would say that like I'm probably shooting an extra like 50% per video compared to what I was doing a few months ago. And using most of those clips, you know, most of that stuff ends up in the edit. And you know what's the weird thing is like, so you would think, okay, if normally I was shooting 100 clips and now I'm shooting 150 clips, you'd think like, well, the edit's gonna take you way longer. It actually goes faster because what I found in the past was I would always get myself into situations where like I wouldn't have anything to show for like a 20-second portion, but I didn't want to just like hold on this one clip. So I'd be like, well, let me make some kind of graphic or like I'll have to like manufacture
the
SketchUp
model, doing all kinds of animations, all that sort of stuff takes more
takes
time
a ton
than
of
just
time.
Getting a clip. Yeah.
Right. So like I still use that stuff, but like only where I need it and where it is. Whereas like in the past I would use it like that, but I would also use it as sort of like I need something to fill in this space. And so now my edits are actually going quicker. So like, yeah, it takes a little bit more time overall, but it's not as much as you would think. But anyway, long story short, yeah, I'm glad that people are responding positively to that video. And
That video made me want to see?
What's that?
A wooden domino within the epoxy.
So that
just for my own curiosity.
That was my initial plan, was to do
that. I remember
that.
You talked about it, yeah.
Right, and like I've gotten a few questions from people like, why didn't you build a form that like basically where you would cast the epoxy as an L so you have to then like put the two pieces together? And I'm like, I thought about that, but again, like as I was pouring the epoxy or up until the last minute, I thought I was going to do that like floating domino inside of it. So then I would have had to like stick the domino in there while the epoxy was liquid, or I don't, you know, it'd be a ridiculous way to do it. So,
right.
Yeah. So it, that was like, it did come across my mind as something that I could have done, but I thought the epoxy dowel, like I'm going to test strength it. Like I said in the video, I'm going to break it and see what happens. In theory, it seems like it would have strengthened it, but who knows?
Yeah. And I would disagree with the people that are saying do one pour, because it's cool seeing where the two pieces of epoxy meet.
Right.
No,
it follows the profile of the leg where there's the wood at the bottom. Like it makes sense that you would have that joint there visually.
Oh, I think
if it was completely seamless. Yeah, if it was completely seamless, then it wouldn't look as.
Yeah.
That seems very like authentic and like vertical about the idea. Like it went straight up. It wasn't like there's no shortcuts or corners taken. I like it a lot.
Let me see the legitimately awesome thing that those people have made. And then
yeah, there you go.
I'll decide to listen to them. Look, we've seen a lot of epoxy. We've seen a lot of these things. It's funny. Like it's funny. Like the things that take a combination to the next level are often sitting right in front of our faces. Right. So people spend so much time looking at what worked for someone else. They don't look at how to slightly escalate it one step farther. Right. So we've seen epoxy and wood combinations become really intriguing to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And we've also known that that kind of like fibrous interaction with a clear stabilizer that supports all those like individual fibers and like locks them into place. But you can still see the frailty of the solid wood disintegrating into nothing. We know that's aesthetically pleasing. It was only a matter of time before someone said, oh, I don't just have to like make a blank and then, you know, put it on the lathe and turn it into a bowl. I can actually integrate this into a legitimate piece of usable furniture at a really high level. Right. And you were the first person that I've seen that's done that and did it in a way that I'm really glad you didn't do it at an angle, even though that's exactly what I think you should do next as like a way to kind of escalate it even again, because again, someone else will take it that step farther. It might as well be you. So yeah, screw those people. They don't know what they're talking about. The project is awesome. It's one of those things where you're both inspired and amazed by it, but it's also completely obvious at the same time, right? Like you look at that and you're like, of course,
right?
That's the natural step that it should do. It's just funny that no one, it's really kind of amazing that no one did it already, right?
Right. And maybe somebody has. Like I would not doubt that. I mean, I know that somebody else has done it. Workshop Edits did a video that's very similar that, you know, I'm guessing we conceived of them roughly at the same time. Mine was I've been talking about this freaking thing forever. I think I said it in the video. I looked back at my emails when I was writing my voiceover. Like they initially contacted me in like June. And right. That's when I was like, here's the idea. And then like, I just had to sit on it until October.
Well, there's a lot of people that get knockouts. There's levels of the cleanness of the knockout, right? So our buddy Johnny from JT Woodworks, who actually came out to Brooklyn, helped us out for a day. Awesome dude.
Yep.
Going to try to get him to move out to Joshua Tree. Increase the tribe out here. He did that. I think he did a stool with it the stool.
That was workshop edits.
That was workshop edits. Okay. Like other people do the things and love workshop edits. Love that. Right. But it's the fact of taking it where you did that 90 degree turn with it and then use it to support a legitimate piece of furniture. So it's kind of like the difference between that project and your UFO table, which I really like, right? The UFO table that you did is exactly like the kind of project I would like to do, right? Where it's like, oh, an aesthetic idea, novel use of material, creates a really interesting thumbnail, repeat and keep doing more of the same. But it doesn't have the same maturity of being like, oh, I'm going to do this gimmick, but the gimmick is just sauce on the main course, which is the cabinet and the full sort of usable piece. I really liked your explanation of why you used beech instead of walnut. Like we all love the way walnut looks, but it doesn't always translate.
Right.
Through photography or videography. So yeah, I think it's my favorite piece. And
I appreciate it. I won't fight you on it.
Seems to be doing pretty well on the whole platform thing too.
On the YouTubes, people are liking it. But anyway,
most liked thing on Instagram too?
Not so, that was another story. So I think it was my most like picture carousel that I've ever done. Like normally if I post a picture carousel, it'll get like, you know, 2,000 likes or something. This one has like 7,000. It's like people really responded to the images of it. And then I did my little like 30-second hero video of it. And you know how you can like choose a cover photo or whatever that's like the still image that'll select from it? So I do that, but apparently like it selects just like a couple frames off of wherever you select. So it turned out to be a black screen. And I didn't even realize that until it was like 30,000 views in and like people had shared it. I was like, oh, do I just leave it? What should I do? I was like, I'm just taking it down. Like, I can't just have this like black screen sit there on my, you know, like it's cool for today or whatever. But in weeks from now, like that thing's just going to be sitting there. So I just reposted it again then like last night. But going beyond that project, now what I'm working on, I'm just wrapping up a coffee table build that, you know, I've been using the Craig ACS a lot. And I've noticed that like everything I've built with it and everything I've been seeing people build with it, it's all plywood. So I wanted to do a hardwood project.
Yeah, similar to that coffee table I made out of solid oak.
All right. This is solid
at your
beach,
shop, Chris. I did this at your shop.
But wait, was that all ACS?
Yeah. I mean, aside from cutting the circle, but yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
But anyways, keep going. I'm not blowing up your spot. I'm kidding.
Putting me on blast. No. So yeah, like the base, the cabinet, like I did joinery on it. Like I wanted to just like legit make it be a stand-in for my table saw and like awesome. Really see how it would go. And like, obviously there are some, you know, not shortcomings, but some compromises. Yeah. That you're going to have to make when using it compared to a table saw. But then there's a lot of things like I literally made every single cut for this project on the ACS. Whereas like if I would not do that with a table saw, like there'd be a lot of the rough cutting that I couldn't do on a table saw. Like it would be kind of dangerous to do without a bunch of jigs. Yeah, I'll be surprised to see how this one looks. It's like, it's all done. I just have to do the final assembly on it, but I think it's going to come out looking pretty cool. So hopefully I'll know by tomorrow when I take it home and do my finished shots. But yeah, that's enough about me. We're pretty deep already. Why don't we throw to a sponsor real quick and then we'll come back.
Yeah, let's throw it to both of our amazing sponsors this week, Honeybook and 3M.
Cha-ching.
Are you the fastest grinder in America? Well, me personally, I'm not. I've never ground anything. Grinded anything? I might be though. Since I never grinded, I could be the fastest in America. If you think you might
have the potential.
That's right. And 3M wants me or you to prove it. So they're looking for 12 metal workers to go head to head in the second annual 3M Clash of the Grinders at this year's FabTech conference in Chicago.
Look, we all know grinding welds is part of the job and not necessarily the most fun part, but 3M is going to make it fun at FabTech. So test your skills against other metal workers from around the country to find out who's the fastest grinder in America.
Me.
So here's, yeah, exactly. Here's how it's going to work. Go to 3M.com/podclash to enter. 12 grinders will be chosen to compete in a grind-off, taking down 3 4-inch welds, one with a fiber disc, one with a grinding wheel, and one with a flap disc. This is fun. I actually really like these kind of like head-to-head challenges because it helps dispel a lot of myths about the different tools and different accessories.
And whoever does it fastest wins the grand prize package, including a speed glass welding helmet and 3M Cubitron 2 grinding wheels and discs. Not to mention bragging rights for a year, which we all know is worth it. Think you've got what it takes? Go to 3M.com/podclash. That's PODCLASH to sign up. That's 3M.com/podclash. Do you run your own business? Well, let's be real. When you started, you probably didn't dream about all the admin tasks, back-end work, drafting proposals and contracts, tracking down payments, invoicing, all of this, it probably wasn't a part of your vision. That's why you need Honeybook.
Honeybook is an online business management tool that organizes your client communications, bookings, contracts, and invoices all in one place. Honeybook makes it simple to run your business better. Mike, you really need this.
Hey.
Professional templates, e-signatures, and built-in automation keeps everything on track and makes you look good. That's really important to me too. It's like, I don't want to just look like I'm basic Excel guy just sending over black line silhouetted spreadsheets. I want everything to represent my brand and my business.
That's right. And they can even work with all the services that you're using already. So whether you've got email lists on MailChimp or you're using Gmail and Excel, maybe Google Suites, even QuickBooks, You can consolidate and integrate all these services into HoneyBook seamlessly.
It's the number one choice for client and business management for freelancers and business owners. So save time and do more of what you love, which in our case, building, making awesome videos with HoneyBook.
That's right. And right now, HoneyBook is offering our listeners 50% off when you visit honeybook.com/modernmaker. Once again, that's honeybook.com/modernmaker. Payment is super flexible and the promotion applies whether you pay monthly or annually. So get the plan that fits your business best. Go to honeybook.com/modernmaker, honeybook.com/modernmaker for 50% off your first year. This isn't a month trial. This isn't a 3-month deal. This is for a full year. It's worth it. Check it out.
Get it.
Thanks, HoneyBook.
Okay, we're back. So, Mike, I've noticed your past couple of videos have had a lot going in and on in the comments section. Like, I'm not normally one to follow comments, but like people, how did I see them? Like somehow people showed them to me or maybe people commented on my video with stuff about like your boy Mike or something.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Dude, people hate me. I don't know what the thing, people hate me now.
Don't exaggerate.
I don't know how I got to this, but yeah, somehow they came across me where I'm seeing them. But anyway.
Yeah.
So
do you want me to lay out the story or do you want to say it?
Here, I'll give the brief overview because I don't like fully know everything, but basically 2 videos ago, people were basically just like blowing you up for being too heavy on sponsorships.
Right.
And then the second one, which seems even more drama filled, is that you stole an idea, apparently, Mike.
I guess so.
So let's just talk about like what happened.
All right. So if we're going back to the my second most recent video, the one that you referenced first, it was the Plywood Media Console, which I still stand by is a banger project. In terms of like a good, clean plywood furniture piece, it's probably one of my favorites I've done. I think it looks really great. And I've got free plans for it, right? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm not doing? Charging people to watch the videos or charging them to download the plans. Instead, right. I'm just going to slap a sponsor read on it. That way, I take money from brands, not the viewers. Right. That's been Modern Build since day one. I've never charged for anything other than t-shirts.
And hats. I don't know.
And hats. And yeah, you got me.
And pomade.
Yeah. And so.
Oh, and the maker brands. No, just joking.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's keep it to content, guys. Yeah. In terms of anything like that, I've never charged for anything because I would rather take money from brands and sponsors if I'm in that position.
Right.
And so LG, the same company that sponsored your amazing broken wood media console, was a sponsor for that one.
Yep.
Ironically enough, if you could believe it, I pitched them a media console idea to promote one of their television.
I'm sure a lot of us did.
Exactly. So they were on board. I threw that video out and one of the things that they wanted was the ad read to be in the first minute or two of the video. I don't remember exactly, but it was very early on where I basically just said, hey, what's up? I'm Mike from Modern Builds. Today we're going to be building this. Booyah. Then it went to the ad read. And the ad read was a typical minute long, whatever ad read where I talk about the TV. If you're interested in TVs, check this one out. You might like it. I've enjoyed using it.
Right.
Then I go into the project. And the thing that people are mad about is the fact that I had a video sponsored by LG and I used the Craig ACS for it.
Why would they be mad about that?
Because Craig is also a sponsor of mine.
Oh,
and so like, I think the way they viewed it is like
on one thing.
Right. And I guess there's a level of validity to it, but it's something that I just didn't understand the blowback on. Because over the course of the year, I agreed with Craig to do a certain number of videos with the ACS. The idea being they wanted people like me, people like you, Chris, to sort of like do enough projects with the ACS to give legit feedback and legit, marketing material to their audience with. Like, they didn't want me to like use the ACS once, blow it up and forget about it and never use it again. They're like, we really want you to try and make this a part of your workshop and see if it's something that works for you.
Right.
And so this project was perfect for it because unlike you, I wanted to do a project that was all plywood instead of all solid wood because my previous ACS project was solid wood. And I was using a base that was similar to one that I had. Oh, okay. So this was the whole rationale to it. I remember now because I thought going into this, this is a great idea. So the base to this media console that I'm talking about is 90% the same as a base that I made for a plywood bookcase a few months back. And it's just based off of some really simple geometry, 15 and 45 degree angles. It's it's just clean and simple.
But you're using a different tool to make it.
Right. In the first video that I introduced it with, I cut the whole thing out with the jigsaw because I was sort of going for lowest common denominator when it came to tools. I built the whole thing with a drill, jigsaw, and a circular saw. And so now I had sort of done this project that was whatever you would call limited tools. Now I wanted to do a project with the same materials in a similar style with really nice tools and nice equipment and see what the A and B comparison would be. And so I used the ACS because the geometry of the base really lended itself well to being cut on the ACS. So anyways, I don't really have any qualms with it. The people that are upset about that having two sponsors on it, they can be mad. I'm not upset about it. I totally am good with my decision. You know what I mean? Like I've made a good video with good plans, and I think a lot of people are going to build that project and be happy with it. So the vocal minority of people, maybe the dozen people that left negative comments, I'm addressing it because I feel like it's something worth addressing, but it's not something that's going to affect my mood or affect like how I do things going forward, because I'm still really happy with the content I put out. And I'm just going to be honest, all the people that are mad, if they had a check from LG, they would have done the same thing. Like there's nobody that's going to say, oh, LG wants to sponsor a media console with LG money, and I'm going to say no because advertising doesn't exist. Like advertising's everywhere.
Right.
Like, you know, there's not a single person that would have been in my position and said, you know what? No, I think I'm good. A free TV and a healthy check. I don't want that. I love making less money, but providing the same quality product.
It's funny because I got a comment on my LG one. Like, I think there was only one negative about sponsorship comment, which is, you know, you're always going to get one
you
or
expect
two in
it.
There.
Yeah.
But this one, the guy was mad because he's like, now you're doing sponsorships with big corporations like LG. I was like, what's the difference if it's LG or yeah. Squarespace or like,
and then they're going to turn around and watch NASCAR where the the freaking things are just covered and they got Fig Newtons on the windshield.
No, I mean, yeah, I thought that was like, I thought it's hypocritical what that guy said to me. I thought because it's like, this is my job. Like, this is how I support my family. This is the only thing that supports my family now. And
right.
I don't get why you'd be mad at me for like, this is how you get to consume it for free. And so like, you're actually the one like being entitled because like, well, I shouldn't have to watch this ad for this free content that I'm watching.
Fast forward, dude. Just fast forward.
Right arrow.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, honestly, like don't watch. Like unsubscribe. I don't get the, granted, I've never commented on anything unless it's like somebody I'm friends with or whatever.
True,
but like,
yeah.
I don't get why you have to comment.
Because no one listens to you in real life.
I guess. I had a theory, I was talking to Dolores about this, that in a way we're kind of fictional characters to them. Like,
oh, big
you know,
time.
We only
yeah.
exist in this like small bite size. Unless, you know, I take that back. Like if you're listening to this podcast, you watch all of our videos. Like I feel like you get a pretty
yeah,
good
yeah.
sense of who we are. Like it's hard
big
to
time.
Fake a personality for this long. But like if you check out a video once every 3 months and that's it, like we are a character on TV to you. And like, you don't think about the fact that like, this is their job. And like, yes, I do it because I'm passionate about it and I love it. But yes, I am also doing it for the money because I need to make money. Just like anybody who goes to a job would probably not go to that job if they quit paying them to do it.
No way. Yeah. So here's the big part about it that I don't want it because I don't want to seem any way that I'm like jaded to the situation or I'm trying to act a way that I really don't feel. When LG reached out and wanted to sponsor my things, that was insane. That was like one of the biggest compliments that I could have gotten. Like that's right. That is a brand that's bigger than a tool company. That's a brand that's bigger than, you know, I don't want to call out any sponsors because I appreciate all my sponsors, but that is a gigantic,
a household
gigantic
bigger than
company.
Viking Raid?
Yeah. No. Like it's not that's the great way to say it. It's not some kind of mobile game. It's not, you know, I'll just be straight up. Like the very first sponsor I ever had was for $100 from a hairpin leg company. From a
yeah,
great company
too.
that I continue to work with for a really long time. Awesome company. But that was how much money my first sponsorship was for. I'm not going to say how much money the LG sponsorship was for, but
$200.
It was enough. Yeah, it was like twice as much, bro. But it's a thing where I remember the first time that I had a sponsor, and it wasn't the fact that I had $100, because $100 is $100, right?
Right.
But I was just so excited that someone was willing to pay money because they saw value in the content I was creating.
It's validating.
That's right. That same thing happens when a company like Home Depot or a company like LG or a company like Amazon, who has all the money and all the options in the world, decides, oh, Modern Builds, we like it. Makes good videos. We're on board. Let's work with this kid.
All right. What part of the criticism is valid?
Do you think it was oversaturated with ads?
I really don't think so.
So you see no validity in any of their comments?
Wait, are these burner accounts of yours, Ben?
So the rationality train to see something wrong with it would have to make it would assume that I think there's too many sponsors on there, but objectively I don't.
Right.
I used the sponsors that I have long term, where I would have used their products regardless.
Right. So here's where I come out on all of it.
In addition to LG,
it's your channel. You get to do what you want. It's their comment section. They get to say what they want.
It's my comment section. I'll block them.
Right. All again. Right?
But I'm not going to do that. No, I'm not going to do that.
I thought the pre-roll was a little bit long.
It was,
and I told you that.
Right. It was a minute and 20 seconds instead of the pre-arranged 60 seconds.
All right. Here,
I said it was a little bit too long.
Here, I'll come back
again. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with doing something that someone else thinks is a little bit too much. Like, that's the whole reason to be an independent media producer, is that it allows us to lean on our own judgment in the face of other people's opinion. So what's great is that, like, you did exactly what you should do, which is working really hard, executing on the people that are paying you, which should be if you're going to have business loyalty, it should be to the people that are paying you. Like, that's craftsmanship in our industry. So I 100% support that. But as a viewer, I was like, ooh. I mean, one, I really appreciated learning a lot about the TV, because I have to do an ad read for the TV, and you did a killer ad read. And I'm going to do
Speaking of plagiarism.
And I edited like 60 seconds.
Let me tell the story.
So I saw Mike's ad read. I was just like, okay, one.
This is better than I would have done.
This is like such an enthusiastic commercial, right?
I killed it.
Yeah. And I was just like, so when I did my version, which hasn't been released yet, my idea was, I'm going to show the TV, but I'm going to be playing Mike's ad read on the TV so that I don't have to do the ad read.
Look at what this guy has to say about it.
So I was thinking, like, oh, I'll give Mike a shout out and get the ad read without.
It's hard to
see. So what does that shout out look like? Are you a fan of ad reads? Well, go check out my buddy Mike on Modern Builds. He's got the best ad reads in the game.
So again, all I'm saying is, in my opinion, I'm not right. I thought it was a little bit heavy-handed for pre-roll. I thought it was perfect for mid-roll. It's just not what I want to see at the beginning of the thing. But again,
no, I hear you. Yeah.
I'm not right. I'm just saying how I think a lot of people felt. And
no, I think you have a valid opinion, but that sort of response isn't what I'm responding to.
Right.
To the person that commented, hey, ad read was a little long, I'll say, like, okay, I gave you that. I tried to get the ad to be placed mid-roll, but they were very persistent on wanting it to be placed where it was.
Right. You're okay with disagreements about on a reasonable spectrum.
Yeah, I'm just talking about the, hey, Mike, you're a piece of you.
We're going to bleep those out.
Enough
you're
of them.
You're a piece of toast.
Bruh, I've gotten some.
But let's
people can get crazy.
Let's shift to what I think is actually the more contentious topic.
Yes, the most recent video.
Oh, gosh. Dude, okay, I feel like I'm a lobster. The water's boiling.
Well, here, before we get into this, let me say, okay, I watched your video to see, so I could know as much as I could coming into this conversation about how you put that project together, right? I was already familiar with the Polk workbench, but not intimately familiar. I know what it looks like. I don't know exactly how it's constructed, blah, blah, blah. That's what I know going in, right?
Yeah.
For anybody who is not aware,
let me just say it. I'm going to answer your question. I'm going to do it all right here. Okay. Apparently, a workbench where you can throw crap in between, in the middle of it, any workbench with storage is apparently a Polk bench.
Okay, so no, here, let me ask you this.
I don't think that's fair.
So
I think that's an exaggeration.
It is. But I'm starting to get, you're right. Okay. I don't know why I'm acting the way I am. I'm cooling down. You're right. Okay.
Let me play devil's advocate that's characteristic, for a second before you start.
Yeah. Okay.
So here's a point that I was going to make. Like I said, I'm not familiar with the construction of his bench. They do look similar.
Yeah.
That said, okay, so the thing that really looks similar about them is the oval-shaped cutouts or whatever, right? That's like the strong thing. And a point that I've made is that, like, I would get comments on the second Bad Larry that I made from people like, you've already built this project. When, like, it's very drastically different from the other Bad Larry that I made, but there's such a strong aesthetic of the trapezoidal top that people go like, oh, those are the same thing. Whereas if those were a rectangular cabinet, people would not associate those two projects at all. So sometimes right. when there's something that is very strong aesthetically, it's like, that's a ripoff of that.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how similar they are beyond that, but those things are very similar. That's an aesthetic thing. It's also a functional thing.
Right.
I don't know. Go from there.
Yeah. So
can I give a little correct. Background?
In a minute. Yeah. So I agree that visually they're similar, but to your point of not knowing how a Polk bench is constructed, I'm in the same boat. I've never looked at plans for a Polk bench.
Right.
I've seen Jay Bates make a modified version of one. That was where I was introduced to what the concept of a Polk bench was, right? He made a couple videos on building one for his shop. I was like, oh, that looks pretty useful. Never really thought about it much again outside of just kind of just being in the back of my head as an idea. Then the first trip to New York, we went to AO5 Studio, which is Ben's homeboys that we got connected with. And in their shop, they had a couple of similar style workbenches. I don't know if they were Polk benches or if they were just in the style of a Polk bench, but it was just the idea of having those oval cutouts with room to store things on the inside. Mm-hmm. And I saw them using them. And I was like, wow, this must be a really handy thing. And then I think a few weeks back, I think for my obsession, I shouted out a channel called Scott Brown Carpentry. Mm-hmm. And he had a video building some sort of similar workbench for his setup. And that was the one where this was right around the time where I was working on the building platform for next to the bus. I was thinking of what sort of setup that I wanted so that I could work on the bus more comfortably. Mm-hmm. And I knew I wanted a big ass assembly table because I'm building kitchen cabinets and all these sort of things. So I wanted a really good reference surface to assemble all that on. And this was fresh off of seeing that Scott Brown video. So I was like, all right, let's just run with that sort of idea. So yeah, I built it, but I've never seen Ron Polk's. I didn't know he had a YouTube channel. I've never seen his plans. I've just seen other people's versions of his thing. Right. Like I'm like four layers removed from Ron Polk.
Right.
So okay, so let's
it's
say
like
that
you never heard David Bowie. You only heard Vanilla Ice.
Right.
I was copying Vanilla Ice.
Yeah.
That's a good
right.
one.
Right. So here's my thoughts on it. And
oh, but real quick. I referenced in the video that it's a Polk style bench. I referenced in the description of the video, it's a Polk style bench.
Right. So in your YouTube video, you do reference Ron Polk. And I think the way you think about things is that you think, hey, YouTube is what I've focused on. It's what I make money at. And that's like the core of my business. And that's where I author stuff. Where when you posted a photo of the thumbnail on Instagram and I would guess you're thinking of like, oh, Instagram's like a more minor channel. I'm sharing the big project that I made on, and again, from a YouTube standard, it's a smaller project. I'm sharing what I built with my own two hands on and showing that YouTube video. Mm-hmm. The thing with these things is you didn't do anything morally wrong in an objective sense. There are some people that are going to have a problem with it. That's their right, just as it is your right to do exactly what you think is okay. So there is no objective truth to this matter. There's only how people feel. And in an exercise in empathy, let's try to see both sides because we obviously understand your side because you're our boy. And the least interesting thing we can talk about is how we all agree with you and you didn't do anything wrong and we got our boys back. But
right.
we're all bigger than that. So I would say it's like, I always forget that there's people that follow on Instagram that don't follow on YouTube, right? And it's not my responsibility because I don't have a responsibility. I can do things however the hell I want. But it's not surprising when there's blowback when I don't provide the same level of information on one platform
to the other, assuming that people are going to cross over.
So, was more information provided on Instagram or on YouTube?
More was on YouTube, because in the video, he actually said that. And so what you saw on the YouTube comments is that when somebody said, hey, how about you give Ron Polk some credit? Other people would say, oh, you clearly didn't watch the whole video, because he did. And whereas on Instagram, I felt that like on YouTube, that kind of sorted itself out. I felt that some of the criticisms on Instagram were valid. I don't think you did anything wrong, but I can understand how somebody would have a negative reaction when they see something that they recognize as a Ron Polk style workbench and they don't see any mention of his name. So again, I don't think saying mean things is then justified that, but I do empathize with the initial sort of feeling that they had.
Okay,
I guess.
Here's a question. If you could go back into, or let's say that you could re-edit a YouTube video right now and put it back up. You cannot edit YouTube videos once they're up, really. Would you do it any different? Like, would you put that more in the front or not mention that you had like the article about it?
Well, you hit it. What I would say is, so like I said, I've never looked at Ron Polk plans. I didn't know Ron Polk plans existed. Mm-hmm. And so I made plans. And like I said, I always put things out for free because I'm not going to charge. I'm lucky enough to have sponsors. I don't have to do that. I like giving things away to the audience. And so as always, like in every single one of my projects, I was like, yeah, go follow the article. There'll be a PDF plan. Check it out. Build it. Show me what you make. And so, you know, kind of quickly, there were some comments that were basically like, yo, why are you trying to steal my boy Polk's business? That sort of thing. I became aware that he's selling plans and I immediately changed the link in the description. I took it away from my build article. I referenced his YouTube playlist of him building it. And I just said something along the lines of like, no free plans, go buy Ron Polk's or something
right.
like that.
Right.
And so if I were to do anything differently, that's literally all I would have done is I would have just said, hey, well, I wouldn't have said, follow my link, go get free plans. I would have just said, hey, this is a modified version of Polk's. If you want to go get his plans and change them up however you want, feel free. Or if you want to just build it off the information in the video, feel free to do that.
Right.
But
right.
I wouldn't have given a plan.
And with that action that you took, I think what we'll see now is we'll see the difference between, which I think was a very responsible and mature and was the right move to do. And so now what we'll see, if there's continued criticism, we'll know that it's much more haterade than it is legitimate things. Because now what you did was you have a way bigger audience than Ron Polk, just factually speaking. You created something that was indirectly inspired right. by what he did. And you chose, after listening to the criticism, not really agreeing with it, but understanding parts of it, you then decided, you know what? I don't agree with this. I felt like I did this in good faith, but I'll throw this guy with a smaller audience a bone and directly link to something, even though it only indirectly inspired me. So if somebody calls you, what really kind of bothered me was and I'll call out names, when Jay Bates called you sleazy in the comments.
Yeah, Jay Bates for that, dude. Like, message me.
It's like
between Jay Bates and then Matthias Wandel commenting on Jay Bates' post, be grown adults and just message me if you think I did something wrong.
Right.
Don't be the Cheeto finger angry commenter. Like, be real and just message me and talk to me.
Right. But
when Jay Bates, you did what I did. You took Ron Polk's plans and built a version of your own and made an entire video series that you monetized about it.
Right. So again, I find that kind of name calling really just
Well, it's just not cool, man. Like, what's the reason to do that?
It's fine. But I think the also thing that you have to remember is you're at a higher level audience-wise than a lot of these people. And you.
Yeah, but he's been doing it for 2 years before me.
Right, but.
Which that's the part that's kind of a bummer is like, I was a fan of Jay Bates. Like, he was one of the people that I looked up to whenever I started making content. I've done videos similar to his videos. Like, he made a doghouse. And I was like, dude, that's such an awesome thing. I like the way he did that. And then whenever I built a doghouse, like I looked at his content as sort of like a model for success. Because at the time, he had a much larger audience than me. He was somebody that I appreciated. But I don't know, man. I don't want to call people out too much, but I just didn't understand that.
I mean, I thought like, okay, this clearly struck a nerve with him. And like I could see people's point. Like, it has bad optics. Like, I mean, it just, there's a bad look to it. But I know, like, there's no way that Mike maliciously did this. So, like, if I said, let me just think about this for a second, let me be critical about what's going on, he probably was unaware. Like, he would not just be like, let me undercut this dude's plan.
Yeah.
And
yeah, you know what I do?
Hindsight's 20/20. And, like, yeah, there's things you would do different if you could do it again. But, like, what can you do now in terms of the YouTube video? I mean, aside, short of taking it down, there's not a whole lot you can do besides, like, what you did, which is in the description. If anybody goes and looks for the article that you mentioned, now, obviously, it leads to the Polk bench. So, hopefully, you know, he gets some sales and awareness out of that, and it turns into a positive for him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, in terms of the YouTube stuff, unfortunately, there's not really much more you can do. I mean, you can try to be as... We all want to be as educated as we can going into something, but, like, we're never going to have 100... Like, we can't be responsible for knowing everything that exists. So, like, right. I don't know what you knew about that, and that's why I wanted to pose the question that way at the top. And, like, yeah. I thought, like, there's no way Mike maliciously did that.
Yeah, I knew it was a Polk-style bench. That's why I referenced it as a Polk-style bench in the video and in the description.
You didn't know it
was, I just didn't know that there were plans for sale.
Right.
So, yeah. I was aware of the fact that this was a Polk style bench. I had heard things referred to as Polk style benches before. Mm-hmm. That's why I referenced it as that in my video. In the description, I just wasn't aware that Ron Polk was selling plans. If I was aware that Ron Polk was selling plans from the beginning, I would have done something differently. But I did my best to fix that mistake. And I hate to be the guy that just pleads ignorance, because that's sort of like a cop-out answer. But it's like, that happens. After 150 videos, one or two things will happen. You know what I'm trying to say? Like, I can't have a perfect track record.
Right.
I remember the only other instance that I can think of that was sort of similar was a few years ago, I made a Nelson-inspired bench.
Right.
It was not a Nelson bench because it had a metal base and was assembled a little bit differently than what a Nelson bench is. I had just seen pictures of Nelson benches on Pinterest, liked the shape of them, and then came up with a slatted bench with metal legs. And people tried to people kind of roasted me a little bit in the comments because I didn't credit, what's the guy's first name, Nelson?
George. Nelson.
Yeah.
Ricky?
I didn't credit George Nelson for the design. And when I'm reading these things, I'm like, who is George Nelson? And so then I go Googling and I realize, like, okay, so... The derivative of the derivative of the derivative that I saw on Pinterest needs to be attributed to this guy, even though I didn't know he existed. And still, you know, in the comments or in the description, wherever I did, I was like, hey, shout out to George Nelson, blah, blah, blah. You know, I cleaned up my error as best I could in hindsight. But I don't know, man. It was just a bummer that it played out the way it did. And it's a lesson learned, you know, do a little bit more due diligence. But for the people that were negatively affected by it, but, you know, would consider themselves like a fan of my content or aren't completely disgusted by me by now, if I'm talking to you, my bad. I honestly didn't mean to do it. I wouldn't have done anything maliciously. It was just a little bit of oversight, missed out on my end, and I did my best to fix it. But that's really all I have to say. Like, it was a small thing that I felt like got blown out of proportion a bit, but that's just what it is. That's life. Pick
what
up
I've
and
always
move on.
Said is there's a artistic and moral kind of side to these arguments, and then there's a legal side to them. And I always get really, I always find it a little bit intellectually weak when people confuse those two things. From a business standpoint, you have every right to do what you want, and Ron Polk has every right to do what he needs to do to protect what he thinks is his. But he hasn't weighed in on anything, which I also understand, too, because he probably doesn't want to look like the person that's, you know, being too defensive about his own IP. And so I get that other people want to stand up for somebody that they think has contributed something to the community. For me, you know, the justification of why is less important than what you do when you do learn a little bit more about the situation, in which case you funneled traffic over to his site to make him some money. So in my mind, this all becomes a moot point. The part that bothers me is people are really quick to jump on somebody, particularly a young guy that's moving faster than they are, and say some negative things. But the minute he fixes the situation, which in my mind, you have. And I can't see how anyone would have a problem with you saying, hey, I was indirectly inspired by this guy's work. I learned about it, you know, maybe like 14 hours too late, but now I'm directing traffic to him. To me, that's like, if you have a complaint out of that, I can see how the initial response was reasonable from their standpoint. But I think if they continue at this point, it's a little bit unreasonable given the actions that you've taken. Now, and I don't think those actions are culpability of you sort of saying, oh, I did something that was wrong on purpose. I think it's you just sort of rectifying the situation, which is what a responsible person does. The other thing is I've been accused of that before with the spiral staircase. But in this case, I had never even seen this person's work and was like completely unaware of it. So I do understand that nothing made me more upset than when that happened, because I was just like, oh, F everybody. Like, I didn't see this thing. Like, I'll show you exactly where this inspiration came from. Right. So, but what that made me, so I'm sort of torn on this, right? Like, you know, Bob from I Like to Make Stuff always goes above and beyond as sort of outlining these things to the point where I almost feel like, okay, Bob, like, we get it. Like, you know, you're covering all your bases. That's awesome. But like, your take on it is completely original and fresh. It's a little bit overboard. But I see how he's doing, why he's doing it when situations like this come up, is it's a cumbersome explanation that helps avoid these kind of situations. Mm-hmm. From my standpoint is, you know, if you are someone that sees some sort of what you think is an injustice, if you go in on an attack and then the person sort of fixes the situation, which I believe you've done, and I would love to hear someone's opinion that feels like this isn't atonement by sending traffic to his for planned sales site, then if they still sort of continue at that point, then I think they just had a pre-existing bone to pick with you. That being said, though, the one part that you said of that I didn't feel completely resonated with me, at least, was when you said, hey, I'm just giving these plans away for free. Look, it's all business, whether it's free or for sale. We're all doing this for business purposes. So I do get the I don't see that as like some sort of, you know, escape clause for those things. But it's interesting too, right? Like at what point does, I mean, it's interesting, like, that nobody ever says that with like an Adirondack chair, right? Because there's no Mr. Adirondack.
Right.
It's interesting when people make very basic workbenches that all look the same, but that's kind of understood as being some sort of, you know, common ground or just sort of naturally emergent thing.
Right.
One of the things that I find most emergent in design is like, at what point of simplicity does intellectual property sort of cease to exist, right? Like, how elemental can something be? Did anyone invent the recipe for chicken soup? Or is chicken soup just something that emerged in culinary cultures around the world simultaneously, but with different seasonings? So again, it's like, it's so hard in these situations to listen and learn and defend yourself at the same time. And saying this as someone that's been in plenty of them, I think the biggest attack I ever had in this category was when I was doing my second company, Free Green, where a lot of architects, especially the dumb ones, thought we were going to destroy their business model. And, you know, our designs were all original, but, you know, all affordable houses start to look somewhat similar. And there was so many architects I'd never heard of that had no presence or published work at all that were sure that we were being influenced by their stuff. So it is a, you know, it comes with the territory. And I think the hardest thing to do is to be objective about, you know, we still think of ourselves as the hustlers just getting started, starting from nothing, but you're somebody with an audience of over 1 million people. And other people are going to look at you as, who's this young guy that hasn't been doing this as long as me, that has more than twice as many followers, making way more money, looks like he's having a lot of fun doing it. And it's really hard for people to see that. And it's not that they dislike you or even have such a thing about you. It's hard for people to see that and not feel occasionally shitty about themselves. So the best thing to do from these things is just like understand the reasons why people are attacking you. Don't justify it, because it's not just. But the more you understand it, the more you can just be like, oh, that's cute.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, so
my whole closing to it, because I don't want to be an
ineffective
dead horse,
little right.
But my closing to it all is like, would I build the project again? Yes. Good project, good video. Useful to me, especially in the situation I'm going to be using it in. I would have just linked to his plans from the beginning if I was aware of them. And then if I could take a moment to speak to Ron Polk, I would say, holler at me if there's a problem. I'm not trying to hurt you. If anything, I saw other people that had built your workbenches. They looked useful, and so I made a version of one. That was it. Sorry that I was unaware of you. Not, and I don't say that in any way. I was just unaware that you were selling plans. I just didn't know that that was a thing. Mm-hmm. And I would have just handled that a little bit differently. But I would say big ups to Ron Polk. I don't know him as a person. I've got no idea. Like, I don't know him as a person at all. But all the people that have said negative things, all the people that are claiming to be in his corner saying a lot of not nice words, that's not him. He hasn't said anything negative. He hasn't reached out to me positively or negatively, but I would take his not saying anything. That goes a long way, especially in comparison to the people that are saying a lot of negative things on his behalf. So shout out Ron Polk. Thank you for not being, I don't know. I mean,
have you
from his perspective, maybe, he has the grounds to like call me out. You know what I mean? Like, he could have said something negative publicly, and he could have done something that, you know, he probably could have gotten quite a few people behind this cause of, hey, modern builds is a bad thing. But he didn't do that. And, you know, I'm sure by now word has gotten around to him that this video exists.
Yeah.
I'm not going to reach out to him. You know, I don't really feel that it's necessary. If he wants to reach out to me, that's cool. I'm happy to talk to him whatsoever. But I would just say, I appreciate you not doing the things that you could have done. I think it speaks to his character. And yeah, if he ever wants to talk to me, I'm always happy to have a conversation with him. Come on the podcast.
All right. Well, I guess we should cut it there.
Yeah, I think so.
Everything.
So what are you guys
there.
Obsessed with? It's been 2 weeks.
You still want to do obsessions?
100%, man. This is all the right. Modern Maker yeah. podcast,
okay, I got
dude.
One. I got to go.
I got one.
So
too.
I've seen this really good workbench. It's, I got these oval.
They call it the Montgomery.
Yeah.
look, I'll just say this. Like, it's really hard to like think
of an obsession
clearly while being attacked. So if you're somebody out there that really wants to right an injustice, think about how you phrase things. Do you really want the person that you think is in the wrong to change? Or do you just want to
get your pound
identify
of flesh
that you found the place to be outraged? So my obsession is another album. I, as I've told Mike and made him listen to it, I've been rocking to the new Sturgill Simpson album, Sound and Fury. Now, I think this is like the perfect album for where I'm at, both physically out here in Joshua Tree in a kind of a post-apocalyptic landscape. And, you know, I think the themes in the album are kind of like right for where I'm at in my time of life. It's kind of like Pink Floyd-ish, but also classic rock and a little bit of country twanginess, I think, you know, would be a way to sort of describe yep. it. And I just really like listening to it while I'm like driving around the desert in a truck, like going fast over bumps and like welding shit and, you know, building. It just feels right for this kind of dusty landscape, and it sort of made me really think about, you know, the how environment actually helped select the music that I've enjoyed the most at different points in my life. Like, it's funny that when I think of certain songs, I think of like, oh, this is the year I lived in Italy, or this is the year I lived in Thailand, or this is the time I was in Africa, or this is the time I was in California versus Boston or any of the other places. Like, I kind of end up picking things that sort of fit as a soundtrack to that specific visual moment in life. So check out the album Sound and Fury, Sturgill Simpson. And it's also on Netflix as an animated feature. Pretty incredible stuff. Very similar to Love, Death, and Robots.
Good stuff. Mike?
You go, Chris. I'm excited to hear yours.
Okay. So I went down a little rabbit, even though I didn't ride the one wheel a whole lot when I was out in Joshua Tree. But then I got back and Jason, the guy who owns Local Fixture and has a shop here, he got into them. He started selling them actually at Local Fixture. So he had some. So I was riding it while I was out here. And actually Johnny had his flight canceled on his way back from Joshua Tree. So he ended up here for a day with his because of it. That's why they wouldn't let him carry it on. So then I started going down the rabbit hole of like e-bikes and e-scooters. So I've been just
e-bike.
And that's why last week, remember, I was asking you guys about the Onyxes that you guys had. Yeah, I've just been like watching a bunch of, like every YouTube video now that I watch, I get served ads that are for e-bikes and e-scooters just because like I've been watching so much stuff and reading different articles and stuff. So I think I probably want to get one, like just to have, actually probably to keep at the shop here so I can kind of putt around in like the uptown area whenever I want to go grab lunch or something. I think it'll be like, first off, it'll actually be more convenient for like this little area getting around, because like you can't really drive fast here anyway, and like parking's a pain in the butt in uptown Whittier. So it'll be convenient from that sense. And I also think it could be one of those things like when you're working 8 hours or 10 hours or whatever, like if halfway through you'd go for a little ride and get lunch or something, it would feel like kind of refreshing. So that's how I'm justifying it to myself.
Yeah, if you work up a sweat in the shop, you sort of air dry on the ride to get some Pop-Tarts.
Got to get down to the 7-Eleven for some tarts.
Yeah. All right. My obsession this week is, it's not going to be content. It's going to be an app. And the app is called Zillow. I know everybody knows about Zillow. Yo, you can get deep into the rabbit, or you can get deep into the like Zillow ecosystem though. There's not a single app on my phone that I'm getting email notifications, post notifications, and I'm just looking at multiple times a day and not being annoyed by it.
Now, okay. When I was buying a house and like, even now, whenever I look for houses, I always use Redfin. Have you ever used that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I also don't use a Google phone. That's like the third list. You got Zillow, Realtor, and then Redfin.
I use an iPhone with Redfin.
No, but I'm just saying, like, that's like a Google phone is like, well, okay, I would use a Google phone if I didn't have the option for an iPhone or a Galaxy.
You're saying it's Bing? Redfin is Bing to you?
Yeah. Redfin is Bing. There. That's probably the better analogy.
I don't know. Like, so Zillow, I always thought of it more as like, here's like the history of this house. Like if you want to look at the sales records and all that kind of stuff, I didn't even realize that it had listings at first.
Oh, okay. You just thought it was like a market report for all the houses.
Yeah. Like it just was basically keeping data on like, here's like, it basically just took like whatever's public record and put it into a user interface.
That's cool. Well, Zillow has that information too, which is part of the reason that it's so addicting is, which this isn't something that I've ever done before, but now that we're talking about it, like I could just look up the price history of every time your house sold, Chris.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I have done
like that information is like addicting. Like if you see a house and you're like, oh, I want to know what they paid for that in 1999, you can find it out. But yeah, so less. I'm currently on the house hunt here in Joshua Tree. And so I've got sort of my notifications set for certain houses in a certain area at certain price ranges. And it's just so addicting. There's nothing that I have notifications like this for that I'm okay with. Because I'm very like, I unsubscribe from every email list. Right. I turn push notifications off for almost everything. But man, houses out here get swiped up so fast.
Do they?
And I think the reason is a lot of people that are buying are sort of like LA people buying a second house or LA people buying an investment property.
Right.
And so when you're used to paying LA real estate prices, yeah, out here in like Joshua Tree, Yucca Valley, 29 Palms, they're basically free houses. You know what I mean? Like
they're like a third of the price.
Yeah. If you're balling in LA, like these are just free houses.
Right.
And so when a good option comes on the market, they're gone in a day or two. And like, that's not exaggerating or anything. So you just got to be really quick with like finding something, getting an offer down before you even tour it. It's kind of crazy. And so I'm adjusting to it, but it's still really fun. And it's just so addicting. Always looking every morning or like getting that notification, be like, all right, what is this? And then you're like, all right, nah, it doesn't check the boxes, or it does. And it's so addicting.
That's why you got to come in with those all cash offers.
That's what I'm doing, man. I got that LG money now.
Perfect. That's a perfect place to end it, I guess.
It is. We appreciate you guys for listening every week, even though we missed last week. If you are a fan of the show, check us out individually on Instagram. I am at Modern Builds. Chris is at Four Eyes Furniture. And Ben is at Benjamin Ueda. The Rockler Bentwood Challenge is coming to a close. We're going to be doing a big recap episode on that. That's sort of why we didn't talk about it this episode. Because a future episode, it might not be next episode. It kind of just is going to depend on how long it takes us to compile everything. But here very soon, we're going to do a dedicated episode to it. So we didn't want to really ruin any of that by giving a bunch of reactions on projects this week. But we appreciate the support, everybody. And we'll see you next time on the Modern Maker Podcast. Bye, everybody.
Later.
Bye.